Simon and Wayne's Spiffing Review with your hosts, Simon Jones and Wayne Bolt.
Hello!
Hello!
And welcome to Spiffing Review
with me, Simon Jones,
and me, Wayne Bolt. And after yet another extended break, for which we apologise once again, but that's
August how we do it.
Getting in the way, we're back with a bang. Well, quite a few bangs, actually.
Yes, considerably large ones as well.
Yeah, as we review two movies. So this week we're going to be looking at The Expendables.
And Scott Pilgrim.
And in betwixt the two, we should be going back to the trailer park, our good old favourite.
Yes, indeed. Before we get started, though, Wayne, I have some important news that will be of extreme interest to you. The movie Tyler Perry, Why Did I Get Married? Is now available on the PlayStation Network for rental in the UK.
How much?
About £4.
Does this mean we can finally get to the bottom of Tyler Perry? Well, not in that way.
Exactly, or Terry Pyler.
Yeah.
But yeah, we can finally actually see one of this guy's movies and maybe review it.
Well, guy's.
And know what we're talking about, because clearly we still don't exactly know.
Even though the BBC did have a nice little feature on their website a while back about who this Tyler Perry was.
Yeah, I'm quite pleased that we helped to raise the profile.
Yeah, we still are waiting for our check in the post.
So whether it's just our ignorance, or whether this is actually the first time that a Tyler Perry movie...
We're not ignorant.
Okay, well, we didn't know stuff. But this might be the first time a Tyler Perry movie is available in the UK, I'm not sure. But anyway, we'll check it out and let you know.
And probably the first time it's available on the PlayStation Network.
Yes, that's a definite. Probably.
Okay.
So, kicking off with The Expendables.
Yes, this is what I like to call a classic Sylvester Stallone movie.
Yes. As if the last 20 years of movies didn't happen and we're still in the 1980s.
Yep, indeed we are. And in fact, most of the plot of the film seems to be taken from the 1980s. Before we get into that, a little bit about the movie. The Expendables are a group of mercenaries. I was about to call them good guys, but one of the things I found in this movie is there are actually no good guys in it. So it's a bit of a misnomer to call them good guys. But anyway, the main protagonist of the story... The Expendables are a bunch of ex-military special forces just hiring themselves out for cash, which is what mercenaries tend to do.
A diverse group, which is cast with a whole load of really old action movie actors and a few younger ones.
Yeah. So we've got Sylvester Stallone, who not only is starring in the film, but also wrote it, directed it, produced it. And probably is the projectionist as well in the cinema.
Indeed, so he's come back with Rocky and Rambo and now The Expendables, and it all seems to be this kind of revisiting his glory days from several decades ago.
So Sylvester Stallone plays Barney Ross. Now, this is something we've done. We don't normally do this before doing a review, which is to look up the names of the cast and the characters they played, because you didn't really get a good feel of the character names from the movie itself. You may have got one or two of the...
And if you just listen to some of the character names, it'll give you a fairly good idea of what kind of movie we're dealing with.
Okay, so once again, we've got Sylvester Stallone as Barney Ross, then Jason Statham, a staple of British gangster movies and the like, playing Lee Christmas.
Oh.
Yeah. Jet Li is playing Ying Yang. Mm. Dolph Lundgren plays Gunnar Jensen. I'm saying Jensen, not Jensen, because he comes from that sort of Scandinavia, doesn't he? And they say Jensen over there. Randy Couture plays Toll Road.
Yes, an interesting name. Mm.
It gets even better. Terry Crews plays Hail Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
And Mickey Rourke is a Tool.
Yeah, he's actually called Tool.
Tool. Then on the badder guy side, I suppose, you've got Eric Roberts playing James Monroe, Steve Austin just playing someone called Payne.
Who's big.
He's big yet, and Gary Daniels, who's British, playing a character called the Brit.
I don't remember him.
No, he was the sort of Steve Austin sidekick. You know, there were two sort of henchmen on the bad guy's side.
With the weird tash.
Yeah, he didn't really say much. Yeah.
Yes, I remember him. Yeah, he was a bit strange.
Also, we got cameos from Bruce Willis, the governor himself, Arnie Schwarzenegger, and Charisma Carpenter. We'll come on to sort of them more in a minute.
Yes. So this is something that's been brewing for quite a while, and it was billed as this amazing collaboration between all these kind of action greats, some of which we haven't seen in movies recently, so it's kind of a return for some of them, certainly to the kind of big mainstream stuff, like Dolph Lundgren we haven't really seen in a big major movie for quite a while.
Well, I can't remember anything he's done since He-Man.
No, I think he's done a load of straight-to-DVD stuff, like a lot of them tend to. But this is kind of their big last hurrah kind of thing at the cinema.
Well, until we get part two.
Which will probably happen because it did pretty well in the States,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, and it's kind of got all the ingredients you'd expect. Exotic locations, lots of explosions, car chases, guns,
So basically what happens is the Expendables, who's Sylvester Stallone, his crowd, get hard to go and take down a small military junta in some Central American island somewhere.
Yeah, the specifics don't matter that much.
No, no. Eric Roberts' character, James Monroe, is an ex-CIA chap who's sort of financing the despotic governor of the small island nation. I don't remember what it was called, to be honest. It didn't really come across.
No.
And there's lots of fighting and death. Yes. And explosions and guns and stuff.
And I have to say, when there was fighting and death, I quite enjoyed it. Because it did the fighting and death fairly well. And it knew it was completely ridiculous. You know, just from the fact that you've got this cast, it's like it's not a subtle movie. And it just runs with that. And the action gets more and more stupid.
And ridiculous, but...
Yes, and the stupider it becomes, the more entertaining it is. And it does it just right, I think. And the car chases are really good. I haven't seen car chases quite as fun as that for a while.
The fighting sequences were really quite brutal. They're much more... So I'll say realistic, but that's completely wrong in this case. I think there's
convincing.
Much more convincing in some of the damaging style moves, which appears to be getting on. I won't be surprised if that's because you've got the likes of Steve Austin and Randy Couture there, you know, from wrestling and MMA background.
You've also got people like Jet Li who know what they're doing and this kind of stuff. And I think that's where this cast really did work, which was in the action, because they... Most of them do know what they're doing to some degree, and even the ones that maybe are more kind of actors rather than stuntmen or wrestlers, they still look the part. And when they're having a fight, you believe that they can do most of it.
Well, yeah, because there's just the movie in which I think Steve Austin broke Sylvester Stallone's neck or something during the filming, something like that. But
and he was like, "Oh, we'll just keep shooting," and then they kind of made him go to the hospital. Whether that's, I'm kind of dubious about that story because. It was kind of inevitable that at some point they might start showing off.
He might have just got a bit of a bruise.
Yes, he bruised his neck slightly. Yeah. But anyway, it wouldn't surprise me if some of them were quite hurt because there's a lot of moves in there that look a lot more painful than they normally do in most action movies.
Yeah. One of the things I really liked about the movie, though, was the way it approached character development and giving each of the characters an interesting backstory. Two of the best examples of this, and I think probably the only two examples, to be honest, in the movie, are of Jason Statham's Lee Christmas character, who, to make the audience feel he's not such a bad person. To empathise with him and see he's not all that bad. It's Lee Christmas is going out with Charisma Carpenter's character. Charisma Carpenter, of course, used to be in Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel, and was quite a cutie back then.
Yeah.
But, I think age is catching up with her a bit. So if you do go to see the film, don't expect to see the Charisma Carpenter of old, but an old Charisma Carpenter.
Yeah, so he did that.
Yeah. Anyway, Charisma Carpenter's character, whose name, it's not really important what the name is.
No.
She's going out with, she was meant to be going out with Lee Christmas, but then decided to go out with somebody else.
Yeah, someone with a less stupid name.
Yeah, and it wasn't very nice, and beat her up, and then Lee Christmas found this out, and then went beat the other guy up, and that's pretty much
it. Yeah, and the main saving grace for his character is when he goes to beat up this guy, he doesn't kill him.
He doesn't kill them or appear to break anyone's bones, he just beats them up.
Yeah, so the definition of a good guy in The Expendables is that sometimes they don't kill people.
The other really good bit of character development was for Yin Yang, you know, Jet Li's character, where he has a family.
Yeah, you don't see them.
No, or hear any more about them.
He just mentions it a few times, and that's about that. The film's odd, because when it's got the action going on, it's great fun, and it knows exactly what it's doing, but there's a surprising amount of the film without action.
Well, they are quite old.
Yeah, I suppose they had to have a break at some point. But there's these extended sequences where you've got Stallone and Statham wandering around talking about like the meaning of life and relationships and all that kind of stuff, and I've got nothing particularly against that, but I don't really want to see Stallone and Jason Statham talking about this kind of stuff. Particularly because Jason Statham can't act. I've actually not seen him in... Obviously, I wouldn't say this to his face. But he's just... Every time he tries to deliver a line of dialogue in The Expendables, it is awful. When he's punching someone, it's brilliant.
Yeah, but the thing is with The Expendables, though, is how much of the lines are actually worthy of giving it all your oomph to. I mean, even Ian McKellen, Sir Ian McKellen, would struggle to... deliver some of this dialogue.
I'd say in Expendables 2, if Ian McKellen can be one of them in the fight sequences, that'd be good.
What, with Patrick Stewart?
Yeah.
Yeah, make it so.
But yeah, I mean, the cast are all over the place, really, because the levels of acting ability, like, they're all brilliant in the action, but the levels of actual acting ability are kind of all over the shop. And Stallone's pretty good. Dolph Lundgren actually surprised me. I thought he did pretty well with a really odd character.
He's
kind of, well, I won't say too much, but his motivation is a little dubious. But yeah, Statham didn't work for me at all.
No, well, Statham was just playing a typical Jason Statham character, though. Well, and that's what you get. If you want that sort of character, you get Jason Statham.
I guess, and that might have worked better if there weren't all these big scenes talking about the meaning of life and his whole backstory with Charisma Carpenter.
Yeah.
You know, if he'd had, like the rest of the cast, just this kind of nothing character where it was basically just the fact that it was Randy Couture. You know, that was his character because it was him.
Yeah.
If they'd done that with Statham, it probably would have worked, but trying to flesh him out into this real person in a film like The Expendables just was a waste of time.
Yeah, the film was obviously playing a lot of homage to a lot of the 80s films, just in like Commando and Rambo and He-Man and all that sort of stuff. I only say He-Man because Dolph Lundgren was in it.
Yes.
It's a very funny film, though. But anyway, we're not talking about that. The effects were good, I thought. The fight sequences were all really good. And in fact, that's what you got. A lot of these characters obviously had to have their own little bit of screen time. So, because they were all quite well-known names in various, either from action movies or in MMA or wrestling stuff. They've all got their own little bit of screen time to do stuff. I thought Steve Austin did very well as the Pain character.
Mm.
But that was mostly because he was pretty much just playing his Steve Austin wrestler character. So it wasn't really much.
Didn't have a huge amount of dialogue, as I recall.
No. No, and when it was, it could have just been from his time in WWE.
Yes.
Mickey Rourke was quite good in it. I quite liked him, but he was just playing Mickey Rourke, essentially.
Yeah, although Rourke's really good at taking not much screen time, throwing in a few random props, like his weird parrot in Iron Man 2, and in this one he has this giant pipe that he's smoking. And he kind of did, I don't know if he requests these props, because his characters always seem to have these weird things.
Do you mean he just turns up with them?
Yeah, I think so. I think he must, because it's just bizarre. It doesn't seem to fit with the rest of it. But yeah, you know, he does that, and actually, you know, without having very much in terms of the script, he then makes quite a fun little character out of it. And yeah, he was worth watching.
Yeah.
I think once it comes out on DVD and Blu-ray, and you can fast forward through certain bits, I imagine this will go down as quite a classic, ridiculous action movie.
Yeah.
As it is, there's a few too many moments where nothing was blowing up for me.
Yeah, and this sort of movie just pretty much needed things to blow up.
Yeah, yeah.
Or be shot, or have their heads cut off, or be shot in half by a very powerful shotgun and that sort of thing. Any of that sort of stuff.
Yes.
But that was one thing of it, was the level of violence in it, and the level of the way people, the different ways people died, was amazing.
Yeah, it was fairly shocking.
I think every single part of the human body at some point in the film got blown up, cut off, or whatever. Not one on one person. But
no, that wouldn't last.
No, but just all on the way through it.
No opportunity was missed to kill people in horrible ways.
No, there we go. So that's that. So overall, yeah, pretty good. I mean, I would have liked to have seen more of them just taking the mick out of themselves and just doing more action. I think the dialogue bits where Sylvester Stallone's script writing, not great.
Yeah, I think
sort of got in the way.
When it knew it was a ridiculous film, it did it really well.
Yeah.
When it tried to make some points, political points, waste of time.
Don't bother.
Yeah, so a mixed bag, but basically you know if you'll like this kind of film already just by the cast. So,
yeah. Okay, so moving swiftly on to the trailer park. The trailer park is a regular feature in the show where we go to the Apple website and have a look at sort of five pretty much randomly selected trailers from the site.
Yes, from the last week or two. So, kicking off with Tamara Drew, starring Gemma Arterton, who you probably saw in Quantum of Solace a few years back, and she's now, and even though that role wasn't much, she's actually managing to forge quite a good career for herself now.
Yeah, also starring Tamsin Gregg, I recognise from there, and it's basically like a bit of an ensemble of sort of British supporting comedy actors from British films or
kind of really
TV.
Reliable cast. Yeah.
Now then, this film looks to me to basically be about this Tamara Drew girl who used to have a big nose, had a nose job, and now everybody in the village in which she goes to, which I believe is full of writers for some reason, or fancy her and want to be her. And then hilarity ensues.
Yes, and it looks like she sleeps with everyone in the village. And lots of comedy antics.
Yeah.
I thought it looked quite entertaining. Did you? Not yet. I thought it was all right. Not in a go to the cinema to see it kind of way, but if it was on TV on a Sunday, then I might check it out.
Yeah.
If I wasn't doing anything else.
No.
It looked gentle and not like it was going to rock the boat particularly, but you know, it looked like a cast that would generally do their jobs well and be entertaining from that point of view. That's what I thought.
Yeah, well, I just wasn't overawed by it, but I wasn't particularly horrified by it. So I'm going to give it, from our very unique Gertie rating system.
If you don't know what that is, check out some of our previous episodes.
Yeah, and then you can find out what it's all about. I'm going to give it an ambivalent face.
Yeah, I'll go for that as well.
Okay, and then we move on to Life as We Know It.
Yeah, you see, this is the other thing. In context, compared to this trailer, the Tamara Drew trailer looked really fascinating. So here we have a couple who... Well, actually, they're not a couple. But they go out on a date.
Yeah, they don't get on.
Don't get on at all. Don't want to see each other again. But their friends, for some reason...
Die.
Yes, die. And then they, leave, in their will...
Yeah.
It's a bit odd, this.
Yeah, leave their newborn baby to this couple who are played by Catherine Heigl and Josh Duhamel.
Duhamel. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, these two are then thrown together to look after the now orphaned baby, and then hilarity ensues.
Yeah, so a ridiculous setup, and then it's just about these non-couple trying to look after a baby and getting poo on their faces, as far as I can see. What I don't really get about this kind of film is...
Why people make them?
Yeah.
And then why people go and see them.
Exactly, because, you know, if you've got a kid, and you're, you know, growing up with the kid and, you know, looking after it and things, I'm sure that's brilliant. But watching other people do it, especially fictional people, I don't really see the point. So if it's happening to you, that's great. If it's happening to your friends, you can watch that and go, that's brilliant.
So you weren't a fan of Three Men and a Baby then?
Not really. No, well, at least that was, like, really silly. Whereas this, I don't know, it seems like it's going to be a really, like, loving, and they obviously, at some point, even though they're not a couple, they actually will get together and it'll all be happy for
them. Oh, yeah, it's bound to happen.
It just looks very, very generic.
Yes. So, Gertie from you, Simon.
Sad face.
Yeah, sad face from me as well. Right, enough of that. Yeah. Enough
well, also, one last thing is it's also a sad face for the trailer itself, because I've noticed that, you know, trailers quite often give away too much, but this seems to be a particular problem in the romantic comedy genre. Every romantic comedy trailer will show literally everything from the film, which in some ways is quite good, because it means you don't actually need to see this film anymore. But there you go. So, yeah, whoever makes the trailers for that genre needs to try harder.
Now, maybe they've gone to some sort of focus group to work out the best way of doing these trailers, and the sort of people who like to see these. We could be alienating at least 5% of our audience here by having a go at these romantic comedies.
That's not going to leave many viewers.
It's not, is it? Right, anyway. So then we move on to Barry Monday.
Yeah, odd title. This appears to be yet another romantic comedy, although a bit of a quirky one, in which a guy played by...
Patrick Wilson,
who you might remember from the Watchmen movie, who was pretty good as Night Owl.
Was it him?
It was him,
Oh, right, okay.
So, yeah, good actor.
I wasn't really paying attention, because this trailer just bored me senseless.
So, yeah, another bizarre setup where a guy has some kind of accident and loses his testicles.
Well, I think he gets... the idea behind it is he's a bit of a womaniser, and that's an important part of the film.
Yeah.
But he gets caught out one day by one of his girlfriend's fathers, who then hits him with some sort of implement. I can't remember what it was.
It was a musical instrument or something.
Yeah, a trumpet.
Right.
Yep. So and then he loses his John Thomas.
He's de-trumpeted.
Yep. And
and of course, obviously, that means that, you know, he won't be able to have a family. His whole womanising days are over.
Because it turns out that he's father the child.
Yes, how fortunate.
Yeah, and then hilarity ensues.
Yeah.
Anyway, for that one, sad face.
Yeah, and again, these films where you've got a completely unpleasant bastard, and then throughout the course of the movie you see him realise the error of his ways and become a lovely person... I don't like those kind of films. It's such a Hollywood cliche, and generally unpleasant bastards stay as unpleasant bastards for most of their lives.
And that brings us quite nicely into the next trailer for Inside Job,
which is all about unpleasant bastards.
It's a documentary all about the banking collapse from a couple of years ago, as you probably may remember it.
And yes, you're probably still feeling it.
Yeah. Now, the most interesting thing about this movie was the fact Michael Moore's chubby little cheerful face wasn't anywhere to be seen.
Yeah, and because of that, it looked like it was something you could take a bit more seriously. With Michael Moore's films, his his style is so extreme and ridiculous that if you disagree with him, he's never going to change your mind because you're just going to think he's an idiot. And if you do agree with him, generally he's still going to annoy you a little bit because he's kind of, his personality gets in the way of the point he's trying to make, which is sometimes quite a good point. Whereas this thing takes a much more down-to-earth analysis of what's going on and kind of lets the drama of the situation speak for itself.
Yeah. Well, I don't really tell you much about it. It's basically a lot of interviews with people who are in the banking sector during the, well, before and during and probably after the banking collapse.
Yeah, and it looks quite damning and is, you know, I'm glad someone's made this document.
Well, yeah, some of the interviewees look quite uncomfortable, don't they, and some of the stuff are being asked. Yeah. So, yeah, Gertie for that one.
Yeah, happy face for that.
Well, I gave it an ambivalent face because I'd like to see it, but not necessarily at the cinema.
Yeah, that's the eternal question of documentaries at the cinema, does it work or not? I'd like to see it not in the cinema, not because I don't think it's worthy or anything, but rather that I'd like to see it on TV so that you can sort of discuss it and analyse it as you're going, which you can't do in a cinema particularly.
Yeah. So that brings us on to our last trailer, which is Mezrine. How are you going to pronounce it? Mezrine.
Yes, a French film, so apologies if we're pronouncing it completely wrong.
But given our track record, we probably are.
Yes. This is about a gangster by the name of Mezrine. Do you have the full name, Wayne?
No.
No? I thought you might with your amazing research abilities.
No. I know who played him.
It's disappointing. Yeah, Vincent Cassel.
Yeah.
I knew that as well. Yeah. Anyway, this is part one.
Well, yeah, part one.
Of a two-part epic.
Yeah, of Mezrine. This is called Killer Instinct, this episode.
Yes, and this appears to be a French gangster who was renowned for being arrested and escaping in dramatic fashion, robbing banks, but very charismatic. Yeah. And it looks pretty good, actually.
Did it look like it was based on a true story or was it made up? I couldn't quite tell.
From the blurb, it sounded like it was based on a true story,
right.
Which will make it even more interesting, presumably. But yeah, it does look like a nicely made film, and Vincent Cassel looks like he nails the kind of charismatic villain kind of role. Splitting into two parts is interesting.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder if that was needed or whether you could fit it into one film.
Yeah,
but not knowing.
Have to wait and see, I suppose.
Yeah.
Now, this is really bizarre, this trailer, because the trailer itself intrigued me to look at to want to find out more about the film, right? Mm. Necessarily wanting to go and see the film. So for me, the trailer's not really quite worked.
It's very vague, isn't it?
Yeah. Now this is going back to something we were saying earlier on with the rom-com trailers. They sometimes give away too much, whereas this time they didn't give away much at all.
Mm.
And I don't know if that is quite. Well, maybe we're going to see more trailers come out later for it.
Yeah, I imagine perhaps if we were, you know, French or in France, we'd perhaps have more of a backstory to this guy.
Yeah.
And the trailer would maybe make more sense in that case, but not knowing anything about
it. That'd be
character.
Like if they did a movie like the Yorkshire Ripper or something like that.
That kind of thing where, you know, outside of the UK, people aren't going to have that background knowledge. Yeah. But yeah, I'm intrigued though, definitely.
Yeah.
So yeah, happy face for me.
I think I gave that an ambivalent to smiley face.
You're very ambivalent.
Well, I think I was just put off by all these crappy rom-com trailers we had to sit through. When we started off with Tamara Drew, I was like, oh, here we go. But, you know, it's going to be that quirky British.
Yeah.
It's going to be
at least that one looked
going,
like quite a good quality one.
And then Life As We Know It, that just put me in a bad mood for the rest of it. So, but out of all the five we've seen, what would you like to see most?
I'd probably go for The Inside Job, in a way. It's a toss-up between that and Mezrine, I think, because Mezrine looks fascinating. But The Inside Job, I'm very interested in as well, but as you mentioned earlier, you know, do we go to see that at the cinema?
Yeah, I'd say I think of the five, Mezrine.
Yes.
Right.
Okay, moving on to our main feature.
Yeah. Da, 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 da.
Scott Pilgrim versus the world.
This, of course, is directed by Edgar Wright, based on the graphic novels by Brian Lee O'Malley, who's Canadian.
Yes,
which explains why it's all set in Canada.
Yes, it is. Which is
north of America.
Yeah, for anyone that didn't know.
Yeah.
So yeah, the comic books have been coming out for the last six or seven years.
Is it that long?
I think so. I could be wrong there, but anyway, they've been coming out for a long time. I think they've only actually this year been released in the UK, whereas they've been, you know, in the US and Canada for a long time.
Yeah. Well, Edgar Wright has had the Scott Pilgrim stuff for about 3 or 4 years, isn't he? He's been wanting to make this one for quite a while. But
been brewing.
Yeah, but it's only just recently been finished.
Yeah, and this year the sixth and final volume of the comic was released as well, just slightly before the movie's release. So it's all kind of tied in quite nicely, and I think the author of the comic's been quite involved with the movie,
yeah,
presumably, because otherwise they wouldn't know how it was meant to end.
Yeah.
This is Edgar Wright's first movie without his usual chums, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. So tell us a little bit about what it's about, Wayne.
Okay, well, the film is about 23-year-old Scott Pilgrim. He's basically a bit of a loser. He's not really doing that much. But he is in a band, which he's formed with some of his ex-school chums. He's just started recently going out with Knives Chow, who is still at high school.
17-year-old.
17, yeah, which is all right. And Scott's very pleased about this, until one day he stumbles across... I was about to say comes across then, but I knew he'd have laughed. He stumbles across Ramona Flowers, who's been flitting in and out of his dreams. And as it turns out, Scott would rather go out with Ramona Flowers. There's only one problem with that. She's got 7 evil exes who all want to come and beat Scott up before...
Yep. And he has to defeat them before he can go out with her.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's still going out with knives. So it's all a bit awkward and a bit tricky, and Scott not being the sharpest tool in the toolkit doesn't handle it particularly
well.
That's
interesting, because actually he's actually pretty damn good at combat. So in some ways, he's quite sharp, like a knife.
That is true. As the fights... begin, we realise that this film, well, actually it's fairly obvious before that, but this is not an ordinary rom-com setup,
no,
as it might sound. It might sound like the kind of ridiculous rom-com setups that we were just talking about and moaning about within the trailer park, but everything about Scott Pilgrim exists in this weird fantasy interpretation kind of inside Scott Pilgrim's head. It's almost like he's recounting this story to people a few years later and is embellishing it with his own imagination.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing where if you ever got into an argument with someone, a couple of hours later you think of all the cool things you should have said to them. Or if you like accidentally get into a fight with someone on the street, later on you're thinking, oh, if only I could have done this and that and that kind of thing. And that is Scott Pilgrim's life.
Yeah.
He lives all those exact perfect moments.
And he's obviously very much influenced by 1980s-style video games and the like, because most of his combat all take place in a 1980s-style video game, like IK Plus or Tekken or any of that sort of nonsense.
Yeah, and the film style from start to finish and all the way through it is all influenced by that kind of thing, because the music is like chiptune-type stuff, and there's all these graphics appearing on the screen all the time.
Yeah.
And it's visually incredibly dense.
Yeah. Now, I'd think if ever there was a director and a film which should have come together, this is the one. Edgar Wright is definitely... This film is an Edgar Wright film, and Edgar Wright was born to direct this, to turn it into a film.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. A more mundane interpretation of the comic could have actually turned it into a fairly generic love story.
Yeah.
And what Edgar Wright's managed to do is keep that crazy, fantastical spirit from the comics, while it's this weird tone the comics have, where it's kind of half very realistic and down to earth, and half completely mental.
Yeah.
And the film treads that line just perfectly.
Yeah. The 7 X's are all fairly unique as well. They're all very interesting. And you'll build up to a much bigger... So the first one isn't that great in terms of... Well, it's not really had much character development time or enough sort of lead time to really build them up. So it's all right. And the next one, they all get better and better. I particularly like I don't really give too much away, because I think it's good to...
Yes, yeah. Well, what I will say is that Chris Evans and Brandon Routh's...
Not that Chris Evans.
Not that one, not the ginger one. Mm. But yeah, Chris Evans and Brandon Routh's exes were particularly good. And the whole thing, because it's this kind of pop culture melting pot based on like the last 30 years of pop culture stuff... The casting is very deliberate in a few places.
Yeah.
We don't want to say too much because the inventiveness in each of the fights is really brilliant.
Yeah, and the fight sequences themselves are all very well choreographed as well.
Yeah, I think what's remarkable actually is the fights and the general effects and visual quality is so far beyond anything Edgar Wright's done before.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's always pushed like the visual possibilities, like particularly with Spaced, if you look at that on like this tiny TV budget, and yet he made it look like an expensive movie, essentially. And he's now kind of shown that, give him a bit more money and he can do really incredible things.
Yeah, well, it's good that you brought Spaced up, because this movie is really for the Spaced generation, as it were.
Yeah.
And I think this is why, perchance, it's not really done that well at the cinema, for some
especially
reason.
Especially in the States.
Yeah, because... in the UK, because a lot of people outside the UK may not know about Spaced, there was a sitcom on in the 90s starring Simon Pegg, Nick Frost and Jessica Hines, who was called Jessica Stevenson back then.
Directed by Edgar Wright.
Yeah. Produced by Nyra Park, who also produced this film as well. Which is another little connection. But it's basically looking back at a lot of the sort of pop culture references from when we were all growing up. So, I mean, for people of a certain age, we'd be looking, from late 20s into the early sort of 40s sort of age, this film, and well, Spaced was certainly meant for them. And this film, I mean, is meant for the same sort of audience. So it's quite a, it's quite a niche little audience it's going for.
Definitely. And the thing with Spaced as well, that's also got that kind of... the way you see your life inside your head. Like, you've got the kind of mundane reality, and then you've got the kind of crazy action movie that is running inside your head that no one else sees. But, you know, Spaced had that kind of feeling, and that's carried over into this.
Yeah. And actually, Simon Pegg on Twitter has said Scott Pilgrim vs. the World is the closest we're ever going to get to a third series of Spaced.
I think there we go. The disappointing box office, I think, will probably turn around once it comes out on DVD. I think it's going to be something that has a very long shelf life.
Yeah.
And it's maybe a bit too quirky and a bit too dense and a bit, there's too much going on in it for standard audiences, because it's going to confuse the action crowd. It's going to confuse the rom-com crowd. You know, who's it for? I guess it doesn't fit into any of the standard easy categories. But once it comes out on DVD, people can discover it more easily, I think.
Yeah. The cast was fairly unknown, which is quite good in a way, because there's no preconceptions. Michael Cera, who played Scott Pilgrim, I think he's been in Arrested Development, hasn't he?
Yes, he's been in quite a lot, because he was first discovered in Arrested Development, and since then he's done a whole load of comedy stuff. He was in Superbad, and Year One, and Youth in Revolt, and a whole load of stuff.
But he's not really like a huge well-known star, is he?
Don't think so. No. He's kind of known for playing that kind of character, though, which is something that... is going to start causing him more and more problems, in that he always plays that kind of slacker, loser, nerdy type guy, which is a pretty good match for Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
But I think part of the problem in the US perhaps might have been his attachment to it. I think people have maybe got a little tired of that character he's playing.
All right.
Potentially. I thought he was a pretty good match. He was maybe a little too nerdy for Scott Pilgrim, based on how I'd been reading the comics.
Yeah.
But, you know, still did a good job. And, you know, he worked in the action sequences, which was a surprise. And and that was all part of the fun, really.
Yeah. No, it's really cool. So, I mean, we need to start wrapping up now. Overall, I mean, it was a very good film. I went into the cinema with slightly higher expectations, because having seen Kick-Ass earlier this year, my expectations of these sort of films were really, really high. It didn't quite hit the heights of Kick-Ass, but nonetheless, it's still a very good film.
Yeah.
Which I can confirm, because I just recently watched Kick-Ass again on Blu-ray, and it's still a fantastic film.
Yeah, it's still probably on film course the year, to be our film of the year, yes. But yeah, Scott Pilgrim lives up to what I hoped, being a fan of the comic. It's got a great message at the end that is more developed than you might expect from this kind of thing. The main thing, I think, is that I came out of it feeling quite gleeful, in the same way that Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs left me last year.
Yeah, well, the one thing actually I'll say about the film as well, on the gleeful side of it, is it's one of those films where at different times, different parts of the audience were obviously laughing at different things. So either there's different references people are picking up, or you were just finished laughing at one thing and you missed the next joke, but someone else kept on doing it. But that sort of film's very interesting, where the audience sort of reacts at different times, because it shows there's a lot going on there, which then lends itself to a repeat viewing.
Yeah, certainly with the audience that I saw it with, they were really enjoying it. And like you said, enjoying different bits of it, but you could really tell that pretty much everyone in the cinema was really, really into the film and having a good time.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen that often at the cinema.
No.
Especially in the UK, people just sort of sit there in stony silence. But the audience loved it, and I think it's great.
Yep.
So, what more can I say? Well, I can say more if you want me to.
No, I was just wondering if there's much more to say. No, I think overall, go see the film. If you get a chance to at the cinema, see it. It's one of those where, I mean, you do benefit from seeing it at the old picture house. If not, wait for it to come out on Blu-ray and then watch it there.
Yeah, and check out the comics as well, because they're great.
Now, actually, it's one interesting, just an aside. I've started reading the comics as well, but I've started reading them as a downloaded app on my phone. Which is quite an interesting way of reading the comic, because actually it transitions from frame to frame by moving around. It gives you occasional bits of music and effects, and it's a very interesting way of actually reading them.
Have you been
reading it in the old paper style?
Yes, I've got the old paperback version, but I have seen a few comics in that form, and it is an interesting way to view them, because kind of the joy of comics is having the kind of frame layout, but at the same time there's always had a slight issue, because you turn the page over and some amazing picture on the right hand side catches your eye and completely spoils what you're about to read, you know.
Yeah.
And that's something that these kind of digital versions get around, because you're going through it in the proper linear order.
Yeah.
So, if
you can, get the comic as well. Anyway, we're coming rapidly to the end of this show.
Yes, thank you for listening. Two films that definitely recommend Scott Pilgrim. Expendables is going to be an acquired taste, depending on how much you love the 80s.
Yeah. Okay, so until next time, goodbye!
Goodbye!
If you'd like to contact us, you can email simonandwayne@spiffingreview.com, follow us on Twitter @spiffingreview, or visit our website, spiffingreview.com. Thanks for listening!